52. Donald's side was a sea of purples, blacks, and blues. He held his undershirt up, his coveralls hanging from his hips, and inspected his ribs in the bathroom mirror. In the center of the bruise there was a patch of orange and yellow. He touched this, barely a brush of his fingertips, and a jolt of electricity shot down his legs and into his knees. He nearly collapsed, and it took a moment to gather his breath. He lowered his shirt gingerly, buttoned his coveralls up, and hobbled back to his cot. His shins hurt from protecting himself from Thurman's blows. There was a knot on his forearm like a second elbow, and every time a coughing fit seized him, he wanted to die. He tried to sleep. Sleep was a vehicle for passing the time, for avoiding the present. It was a trolley for the depressed, the impatient, and the dying. Donald was all three. He turned out the light beside his cot and lay in the darkness. The cryopods and shifts were exaggerated forms of sleep, he thought. What seemed unnatural was more a matter of degree than of kind. Cave bears hibernated for a season. Humans hibernated each night. Daytime was a shift. Each one endured like a quantum of life. All the short-term planning leading up to another bout of darkness. Little thought given to stringing those days into something useful. Some chain of valuable pearls. Just another day to survive. He coughed, which brought bolts of agony to his ribs and flashes of light to his vision. Donald prayed to black out, to pass away, but the gods in charge of his fate were expert torturers. Just enough, but not too much. "Don't kill the man," he could hear his wounds whispering to one another. "We need him alive so that he can suffer for what he's done." The coughing passed with a taste of copper on his lips, blood misting his coveralls. But he didn't care. He laid his head back, soaked in sweat from pain and exertion, and listened to the feeble groans escaping his lips. Hours or minutes passed, days. There was a rap at the door, the slide and click of a tumbler, someone flicking on the lights. It would be a guard with dinner or breakfast or some other meaningless designation of time of day. It would be Thurman to lecture him, to grill him, to take him and put him to sleep. "Donnie?" It was Charlotte. The hall behind her was third shift dim. As she came to him, a man filled the doorway, one of the security officers. They had discovered her and were locking her up as well. But they were giving him this moment, at least. He sat up too quickly, nearly lost his balance, but their arms found one another, both of them wincing in the embrace.
"My ribs," Donald hissed. "Watch my arm," his sister said.
She untangled herself and stepped back, and Donald was about to ask her what was wrong with her arm, but she pressed a finger to her lips.
"Hurry," she said. "This way."
Donald peered past her to the man in the doorway. The guard gazed up and down the hallway, was more concerned about someone coming than about him or his sister escaping. The ache in Donald's ribs lessened as he realized what was going on.
"We're leaving?"
he asked. His sister nodded and helped him stand. Donald followed her into the hall. So many questions, but silence was paramount. Now wasn't the time. The security officer closed the door and locked it. Charlotte was already heading toward the lifts. Donald limped after her, barefoot, his left leg singing with every step. They were on the admin level. He passed the accounting offices where spares and supplies were managed, records, where the major happenings of every silo were tallied and entered into the servers, population control, where so many of his reports had once originated. All the offices quiet at what must have been an early morning hour. The security station was unmanned. Beyond it, a lift was waiting for them, persistently buzzing in a hold state. Donald noted a strong odor of cleaning agent in the lift. Charlotte slammed the hold button back in, scanned her ID, and pressed the armory level. The guard slid through the closing door sideways, and Donald noticed the gun in his hand. It wasn't for fear of being discovered by others that he was carrying that gun, Donald realized. They weren't quite free. The young man stood on the other side of the lift and watched him and his sister warily.
"I know you," Donald said. "You work the late shift."
"Darcy," the guard said. He didn't offer his hand. Donald thought of the empty security station and realized this man should have been there.
"Darcy, right. What's going on?"
He turned to his sister. A gauze wrapping could be seen peeking out from her short-sleeved undershirt.
"Are you okay?"
"I'm fine."
She watched the floors light up and slide by with obvious trepidation.
We flew another drone. She turned to Donald, her eyes on fire. It made it through. You saw it? His wounds were forgotten. The man standing in the lift with a gun was forgotten. It had been so long since that first light gave him a brief glimpse of blue skies that he had grown to doubt it. Had come to think it had never happened at all. The other flights had failed, had never reached as far. The lift slowed as it approached the storehouse. The world isn't gone, Charlotte confirmed. Just our piece of it. Let's get off the lift, Darcy said. He waved the gun. And then I want to understand what the hell is going on. And look, I'm not above having you both locked up before the morning shift comes on. I'll deny we ever talked like this. Just inside the armory, Donald took a deep, wheezing breath and patted his back pocket. He pulled out the cloth and coughed, bent over to reduce the strain on his ribs. He folded the cloth away quickly so Charlotte couldn't see. Let's get you some water, she said, looking to the storehouse of supplies. Donald waved her off and turned to Darcy. Why are you helping us? He asked, his voice hoarse. I'm not helping you, Darcy insisted. I'm hearing you out. He nodded to Charlotte. Your sister has made some bold claims, and I did a little reading while she put her bird together. I gave him some of your notes, Charlotte said. And the drone flight. He helped me launch it. I put her down in a sea of grass. Real grass, Donnie? The sensors held out for another half hour. We just sat there and stared at it. But still, Donald said, looking to Darcy. You don't know us. I don't know my bosses either. Not really. But I saw the beating you took, and it didn't sit right with me. You two are fighting for something. And it might be something bad, something I'm going to stop, but I've noticed a pattern. Any question I ask outside of my duties, and the flow of information stops. They want me to work the night shift and have a fresh pot on in the morning. But I remember being something more in a different life. I was taught to follow orders, but only up to a point. Donald nodded grimly. He wondered if this young man had been deployed overseas. He wondered if he'd suffered from PTSD, had been on any meds. Something had come back to him, something like a conscience. I'll tell you what's going on here, Donald said. He led them away from the lift doors and toward the aisle of supplies that held canned water and MREs. My old boss, the man you watched give me this limp, explained some things, more than he likely meant to. Most of this is what I've put together, but he filled in some blanks. Donald lifted the lid on one of the wooden crates his sister had pried open. He winced in pain, and Charlotte rushed to help him. He grabbed a can of water and popped the lid, took a long swig while Charlotte pulled out two more cans. Darcy switched his gun to his other hand to accept a can, and Donald felt the presence of crate after crate of guns around him. He was sick of the things. Somehow the fear of the one in Darcy's hand was gone. The pain in his chest was a different sort of bullet wound. A quick death would be a blessing. We aren't the first people to try and help a silo, Donald said. That's what Thurman told me. And a lot more makes sense now. Come on. He led them off that aisle and down another. A light flickered overhead. It would die soon. Donald wondered if anyone would bother to replace it. He found the plastic crate he was looking for hidden among a sea of others, tried to pull it down, and felt a cry from his ribs. He sucked it up and hauled it anyway, his sister helping with one hand, and together they carried it to the conference room. Darcy followed. Anna's work, he grunted, hefting the container onto the conference table while Darcy hit the lights. There was a schematic of the silos beneath a thick sheet of glass, and the glass was marked with old wax notes, scratched into illegibility by elbows and folders and glasses of whiskey. All of his other notes were gone, but that was okay. He needed to look for something old, something from the past, from his previous shift. He pulled out several folders and flopped them onto the table. Charlotte began looking through them. Darcy remained by the door and glanced occasionally at the floor in the hall, which remained splattered with dried blood. There was a silo shut down a while back for broadcasting on a general channel. Not on my shift. He pointed to silo 10 on the table, which bore the remnants of a red X. A burst of conscience broadcast on a handful of channels, and then it was shut down. But it was silo 40 that kept Anna busy for the better part of a year. He found the folder he was looking for, flipped it open. Seeing her handwriting blurred his vision. He hesitated, ran his hands across her words, remembering what he'd done. He had killed the one person trying to help him. The one person who loved him.
the one person reaching out to these silos to help, all because of his own guilt and self-loathing for loving her back. "Here's a rundown of the events," he said, forgetting what he was looking for. "Get to the point," Darcy said. "What's this all about? My shift is up in 2 hours, and it'll be daylight soon. I'll need both of you under lock and key before then." "I'm getting there." Donald wiped his eyes and composed himself, waved his hand at a corner of the table. "All of these silos went dark a long time ago, a dozen or so of them. It started with 40. They must have had some kind of silent revolution, a bloodless one, because we never got any reports. They never acted strange, a lot like what's going on in 18 right now." "Was," Charlotte said. "I heard from them. They've been shut down." Donald nodded. "Thurman told me." "I meant to say was. Thurman also hinted that they were originally going to build fewer silos but kept adding more for redundancy. There are a few reports I found that suggested this as well. You know what I think? I think they added too many. They couldn't monitor them all closely enough. It's like having a camera on every street corner. But you don't have enough people watching the feeds. And so this one slipped under the rails." "What do you mean when you say these silos went dark?" Darcy asked. He sidled closer to the table and studied the layout under the glass. "All the camera feeds went out at the same time. They wouldn't answer our calls. The order mandated that we shut them down in case they'd gone rogue, so we gassed the place, popped the doors. And then another silo went dark. And another. The heads on shift here figured that in addition to the camera feeds, they'd sorted out the gas lines as well. So they sent the collapse codes to all of these silos." "Collapse codes?" Donald nodded and drowned a cough with a gulp of water. He wiped his mouth with the back of his sleeve. It was comforting to see all the notes sat on the table. The pieces were fitting together. "The silos were built to fail, and all but one of them will. There's no gravity to take them down, so they had us build them. They had me design them, with great slabs of concrete between the levels." He shook his head. "It never made sense at the time. It made the dig deeper, increased costs. It's an insane amount of concrete. I was told it had something to do with bunker busters or radiation leaks. But it was worse than that. It was so they'd have something to take down. The walls aren't going anywhere. They're tied to the earth." He took another sip of water. "That's why the concrete. And it was because of the gas that they didn't want lifts. Never understood why they had us take them out. Said they wanted the design more open. It's harder to gas a place if you can block off the levels." He coughed into the crook of his arm, then drew a finger around a portion of the conference table. "These silos were like a cancer. 40 must have communicated with its neighbors, or they just took them offline as well, hacked them remotely. The heads on shift here in our silo started waking people up to deal with it. The collapse codes weren't working. Nothing was. Anna figured they'd discovered the blast charges in 40 and had blocked the frequency. Something like that." He paused and remembered the sound of static from her radio. The jargon she'd used that gave him headaches, but made her seem so smart and confident. His gaze fell to the corner of the room where a cot once lay, where she used to sneak over in the middle of the night and slip into his arms. Donald finished his water and wished he had something stronger. "She finally managed to hack the detonators and bring the silos down," he said. "It was this or they were going to risk sending drones up or boots over, which is last page order stuff, back of the book." "Which is what we've been doing," Charlotte said. Donald nodded. "I did even more of it before I woke you, back when this level was crawling with pilots." "So that's what happened to these silos? They were collapsed?" "That's what Anna said. Everything looked good. The people in charge over here were relying on her, taking her word. We were all put back to sleep. I figured it was my last snooze, that I'd never wake up again. Deep freeze. But then I was brought out for another shift, and people were calling me by a different name. I woke up as someone else." "Thurman," Darcy said. "The shepherd." "Yeah, except I was the sheep in that story." "You were the one who nearly got over the hill?" Donald saw the way Charlotte stiffened. He returned his attention to the folders and didn't answer. "This woman you were talking about," Darcy said, "was she the same one who messed up the database?" "Yeah, they gave her full access to fix this problem they were having. It was that severe, and her curiosity got her looking in other places. She found this note about what her father and others had planned, realized these collapse codes and gas systems weren't just for emergencies. We were all one big ticking time bomb, every single silo. She realized that she was going to be put in cryo and never wake up again. And even though she could change anything she wanted, she couldn't change her gender. Couldn't make it so that anyone would wake her up, and so she tried to get me to help. She put me in her father's place. Donald paused and fought back the tears. Charlotte rested her hand on his back. The room was quiet for a long moment. But I didn't understand what she wanted me to do. I started digging on my own, and meanwhile Silo 40 isn't gone at all. The place is still standing. I realize this when another silo goes dark. Donald paused. I was acting head at the time, wasn't thinking straight, and I signed off on a bombing. Whatever it took to make it all go away. I didn't care about the tremors, being spotted, just ordered it done. We cratered anything over there that was still standing. Drones and bombs started thinning them out. I remember, Darcy said. That was about when I got on shift. There were pilots up in the cafeteria all the time. They worked a lot in the middle of the night. And they worked down here. When they were done and went back under, I woke up my sister. I was just waiting for them to leave. I didn't want to drop bombs. I wanted to see what was out there. Darcy checked the clock on the wall. And now we've all seen it. There's another 200 years or so before all the silos go down, Donald said. You ever think about why this silo only has lifts? Doesn't have any stairs? You want to know why they call it the Express, but the damn thing still takes forever to get anywhere? We're rigged to blow, Darcy said. There's that same mass of concrete between every level. Donald nodded. This kid was fast. If they let us walk up a flight of stairs, we'd see. We'd know, and enough people here would know what that was for, what this meant. They might as well put the countdown clock on every desk. People would go insane. 200 years, Darcy said. That might feel like a lot of time to others, but that's a couple naps for us. But see, that's the whole point. They need us dead so no one remembers. This whole thing... Donald waved at the conference table with a depiction of the silos. It's as much a time machine as a ticking clock. It's a way of wiping the earth clean and propelling some group of people, some tribe chosen practically at random, into a future where they inherit the world. More like sending them back into the past, Charlotte said. Back into some primitive state. Exactly. When I first learned about the nanos, it was something Iran was working on. The idea was to target an ethnic group. We already had machines that could work on a cellular level. This was just the next step. Going after a species is even easier than targeting a race. It was child's play. Erskine, the man who came up with this, said it was inevitable, that someone would eventually do it, create a silent bomb that wipes out all of humanity. I think he was right. So what are you looking for in these folders? Darcy asked. Thurman wanted to know if Anna ever left the armory. I'm pretty sure she did. Things would show up down here that I couldn't find on the shelves. And he said something about gas lines. We've got an hour and a half before I need to get you back, Darcy said. Yeah, okay. So Thurman found something here in this silo, I think. Something his daughter did. Something she snuck out and did. I think she left another surprise. When they gassed 18, Thurman mentioned that they did it right this time. That they undid someone's mess. I thought he was talking about my mess, my fighting to save the place. But it was Anna who had changed things. I think she moved some valves around, or if it's all computerized, just changed some code. There are two types of machines, both of which are in my blood right now. There are those that keep us together, like in the cryopods, and then there are the machines outside around the silos, those we pump inside them to break people down. It's the ultimate haves versus the have-nots. I think Anna tried to flip this around, tried to rig it up so the next silo we shut down would get a dose of what we get. She was playing Robin Hood on a cellular level. He finally found the report. It was well worn. It had been looked through hundreds of times. Silo 17, he said. I wasn't around when it was put down, but I looked into this. There was a guy there who answered a call after the place was gassed, but I don't think it was gassed, not correctly. I think Anna took what we get in our pods to stitch us up and sent that instead. Why? Charlotte asked. Donald looked up. To stop the world from ending, to not murder anyone. To show people some compassion. So everyone at 17 is okay? Donald flipped through the pages of the report. No, he said. For whatever reason, she couldn't stop the airlock from popping. That's part of the procedure. And with the amount of gas outside, they didn't stand a chance. I spoke to someone at 17, Charlotte said. Your friend, that mayor, is over there. There are people there. She said they tunneled their way over. Donald smiled. He nodded. Of course, she wanted me to think she was coming after us.
Well, I think she's coming after us now. We need to get in touch with her. What we need to do, Darcy said, is start thinking about the end of this shift. There's going to be a hell of a beating in about an hour.
Donald and Charlotte turned to him. He was standing by the door, right near where Donald had been kicked over and over.
I mean my boss, Darcy said. He's going to be pissed when he wakes up and discovers a prisoner escaped during my shift.